Anthony. And please, Mac, join me in making them feel welcome. Thank you.
Hi, guys. So we're going to talk about Anthony's journey, really, through football tonight. He's had many different journeys in life, but we've just decided that tonight it would be really good for you to get a glimpse of how he actually came to be drafted as an AFL player. For me, my background is I'm a sports coach. I was a sports coach at Cairo Christian School for 25 years. I've just recently retired from that because it's a long way to travel from Gisborne all the way over to Druin, and Anthony now has, you know, his wage is a little bit better than what it was even 2 years ago. So I don't have to pay the bills now. So I've had six kids. Anthony is the last, and very much a part of who we are. So we met because my husband died 16 years ago, and the older kids were at university. The youngest one was still at school. So for 6 years, I put them through university. I played mum and dad, and went to work, and basically burnt myself out of life. So my daughter was doing missionary work, and she was up on the Tiwi Islands, and she was a house parent up there for these kids. And so I went up there with her, and I just said, just give me a roof over my head and some food, and I'll run your sports program and you know, just see what I can offer the kids. I met the Tiwi Bombers football coach on the plane over to the Tiwi Islands, and we got talking. And so I ended up helping with the Tiwi Bombers in their training sessions, and then was a water runner on in, you know, very high humidity heat in the NTFL. Yeah, your turn.
So born and raised up in Tiwi Islands. Pretty much grew up with my grandma since birth. Pretty much had probably my fun times with my grandma until when I was 10, she passed away. And, you know, my life sort of changed a bit after grandma passed away, because she was the only person that sort of took me to school, looked after me, and pretty much was, you know, my mum ever since birth. So that's where I started. Then played a bit of footy, bit of Auskick, but it wasn't really much footy going on there, just mucking around, having a kick. Didn't really go to Darwin until I was 14. I started playing with Tiwi Bombers, which is the local team that flies from the Tiwi Islands to Darwin. So.
And was that legal?
Yeah, 14 was legal. It wasn't. That to put, I guess my age was 16 to qualify. So, and yeah, most, I guess, people on the island thought that I was 16, but I was actually 14 playing with men. So.
And that did cause a problem when he came down here playing for NT Thunder, because everybody thought he was 18 and in his last year of playing. And I had to say, no, I know what his birth date is. And they're going, no, you have to be wrong. And I'm arguing with them. And that's why all that happened. But we had his birth certificate by then, so we were right.
So I played one season there, then got a phone call from NT Thunder, which is the representative club that plays for your state. So I was 14, so we went to Canberra, and that was probably my first time I've experienced cold weather. So so it was quite funny, because most of us didn't really enjoy the cold, so we end up going to the change room and got a deep heat and, you know, put it all over us just to keep us warm. So, but that was the first time I've actually experienced, you know, moving out of Tiwi Islands and going and play and meeting the other guys from Darwin. And played my first game and did my ankle. That pretty much didn't give me much confidence to keep going with my footy. So, that was the first.
So you couldn't play the rest of the carnival?
No, I couldn't play the rest of the carnival. So that was my first game and last. Another year went. We sort of played with two bombs again, and Mum actually came and because my sister was working on the Two Islands as a house parent. So that's when the first time I saw Mum. She was at the school scrubbing all the walls because it was dirty, and you know, we thought, oh, what are these people doing scrubbing the walls for? So
because it's red dirt up there, and remember, I was brain dead. I just needed somebody to put a brush in my hand, and off I went. That was it.
Yep.
But the poor kids didn't know, and I didn't really interact too much with you until training.
Yeah, training. One time I was sort of we went to Darwin, and I forgot my socks, and that was the time where I guess I needed somebody at that time, and my coach went off at me, and pretty much felt embarrassed that I left my socks, and I was only 14, and my coach is going off at me.
You were about 16.
16?
Yeah, you were 16.
Mum was there to. Look after me, and she told my sister to take her socks off and give it to Anthony, and that was the first time that I've had somebody that really cared about me, and had real interest, and from that point I sort of got attached to Mum, and she was there to sort of support me all the way. So
because when Grandma died, Anthony was only 10, and he didn't really have anybody out in his family or in the community that wanted to give him a home as such, and he just slept in a house that he'd grown up with his aunties. So when we come along, that was just a natural thing for me to do as a mother, was, okay, well, let's work this out. How are we going to work it out? And, I didn't realise it was such a pivotal part of Anthony's life because, I didn't know his story. I didn't, I didn't know that Grandma had died and he was basically left alone. But, we did forge a bond very much over ice baths.
I think we didn't really enjoy it, but we sort of...
I had the food and the biscuits and
Mum
the cordial.
Yeah, had the food and biscuit and cordial, so that was our excuse to go and do some ice bath. But we went there for a long time. So
you talk about the cold, and the other boys were quite good because that was the whole idea. If you come with me, you've got to do your ice bath, and then I'll feed you. And Anthony always tried to hide, always. And I'd say right in. And as soon as he got in, what did you do?
Yeah, I got out.
But what did you do when you were in there?
Oh, I can't remember what I did.
Scream. It was just, it was pretty funny. And I'd say, no, So, that was our, we sort of bonded, I suppose, from there. And so up on in the college, there was three little boys that followed us around. I'm talking about 16 to 18-year-olds. But, they were kids that were sort of a little bit lost in life, I suppose. We didn't realise that at the time, but wherever Nikki went and I went, we'd have one side, one the other, and Anthony was always at the back. So he didn't talk much. I didn't realise that he couldn't read or write English at that time, and he could hardly speak English. He could, he could hold a conversation of, Tiwi English sort of thing. And then you asked?
Yeah, so we asked if we can come down for Christmas, and that was the first time that I guess we actually approached somebody from other race, I guess. So I think for us it was a good opportunity to go and see what Christmas is like, because growing up on the TV Islands, you didn't really experience Christmas and presents and stuff, so you celebrated, but it wasn't big on the island. So for us, was it'll be a good opportunity, I guess, to come down and experience those sort of things. So.
But little did we know that Anthony Tippenwoody then had an ulterior motive. We took him to the school that both my children taught at and I coached at, and from the back of the car, just as we were driving in, you said? He just said, I'm going to come to this school. And we laughed. We laughed. He hadn't had a pair of shoes. He'd taken Michael's shoes. That was my eldest son's shoes. I said, you've got to wear a tie at this school. There's no way you'd be able to come to this school. And he said, yeah, well, I'm coming. And that was it. We didn't sort of really discuss it after that until we went back on the island. And then, you can say this one, it didn't matter where I was on the island. It didn't matter. There could be a football field, you know, 200 metres away, and he was on the other side, and I was on this side, and he'd yell out.
Yeah, I'd pretty much yell out to Mum, you know, hey, have you, you know, rang the school yet? Pretty much for the whole 3 weeks, wherever she went, I would just, yeah, hassle till I got the answer, so...
So I, at that time, I was living in a house, in the brother's house with Carl Gunderson, the coach of the Tiwi Bombers, and an NT AFL guy that used to do the Oz kick and run the football on the island. And I walked in one day and I said, I've had this kid. This kid just keeps at me all the time. He really wants to go to school down south. And they just looked at me and they said, well, what's your problem? And I went, well, you know, I've already had all my kids. And they said, well, he only wants to go to school. So, you know, what about it? You know, we'll make some phone calls and see what can happen. And I went, oh, yeah. So the AFLNT guy, he made some phone calls with Gippsland Power. And they were interested. He said he was a pretty good player. Then I had to make the phone calls to our school principal, who just kept saying, it's not a sports school. He's good at sport, but it's not a sports school. And I kept going, but he doesn't want to come for a sport. Well, I want to hear from him. And can you remember what you said to Rob?
Yeah, so he said, oh, you know, it's not a sports school. Then I said, you know, I'm not there for sport. You know, I want to get an education and, you know, give me a chance. So, yeah, it was a lot of meetings going on, and I think we went, to Melbourne.
We had to go back to Melbourne for a week, and at this time Gippsland Power knew that we were there for a week, and they were having so we're sort of talking, I suppose, the beginning of February, and they were in their pre-season games. So they said, oh, can you bring him for a game and we'll have a look at him? And I said, oh yeah, okay. I'm not really know much about, you know, the representative football side. I was sort of more into netball. The boys played a bit of football, but played soccer more. So we ended up at the Oval. You were pretty scared. And what happened?
Yeah, so he, a coach named Damon Carroll, so he works at Hawthorn. So he came, he rang because they it was lightning and it was raining, so they couldn't play the game, and actually rang and said, I'll bring some players with me and we'll do some training at the school level. So that was my first time I met the players and the coach, and we did a couple of drills. It was five on my right, five on my left.
And he goes, we'll take you. Yeah. Just like that. Be it training on, I think that was a Monday, be it training on the Wednesday.
Yeah, so we went to training on Wednesday and, did well for the training session, and we didn't know that they had their presentation night, so we didn't go in well prepared, so we've...
They said, are you right? Are you ready to play? And I went, oh, what do you mean? And they said, well, you know, we got jumper presentations tonight. Is he going to play or not? And I'm just, oh, okay, then where, when? And we lived about an hour and a quarter from where they actually trained every night and played. So there was no time to go back home. So we had to go to the shops and buy clothes. Neither of us had any clothes to wear to do. And, that was at the start of you playing for Gippsland Power. Yep. So how did that go?
So my first year, I didn't really quite understand the structures and the coaches were saying.
That you had to train.
You
had to run.
So yeah,
you got to remember, Tiwi Island kids are brought up. If it's not a football they're kicking, it's a Coke bottle they're kicking. So their skills are exceptional, absolutely exceptional. So, and Anthony was the best of the best up there, obviously, as a junior on the island we're talking about. So then they come into Darwin and they're so quick and their skills are still really good, but then they come down to Melbourne and you have to tackle. You have to listen to what the coach is saying. You just don't get on the field and just run and run and run. So it was a bit of an eye-opener, and because he was so behind in school, he used to have to do schoolwork for about 4 or 5 hours after he came home from school. So there wasn't a lot of time to practice for football, except he used to have to do this 3K run. Now, me being very trustworthy, I'd say, right, go on, get your joggers on, off you go. Did you do it?
Yeah, I ran probably half of it and walked the whole time. So, but yeah, for me, I didn't really understand, I guess, what it takes to get drafted or be at a standard where an AFL player would. So for me, it was, I guess, education was probably the most important thing. So I had to focus on that, and I didn't really understand how the system worked down in Melbourne. So,
but you played all right, okay?
Yeah, I played okay. My first year, we played in the grand final, so that was, I guess, really enjoyable. I really enjoyed that.
It's really funny because people ask what it's like, and you know, as a parent, it's very, very difficult because with Anthony, he wasn't getting on the bus. There was a bus that came down for Gippsland Power, and he's a very shy boy. And I used to take him every Wednesday. I'd take him to Morwell and sit there while he trained, and then we'd go home. And there'd be things fired at him like, what are you feeding him? He's overweight. What are you feeding him? What I normally feed all the kids. Well, you know, what's that? If he doesn't eat his vegetables, do you make him another meal? And I went, I've already had 4 kids. Like, there's no way in the world I'm going to do that. And that was a bit of a problem because, you know, as a parent, I didn't sort of understand his metabolism and how he worked. And what I couldn't explain to people was that, you know, here's this kid that was basically on the street for 6 years. So he was hungry. He was hungry all the time. And, you know, he went to the cupboard and he'd go, oh, Vegemite, peanut butter, jam, you know, and things that we just take for granted. But, you know, he was lucky to have any food in the cupboard. So, you know, if every night before he went to bed, he'd want his toast and tea. Because on the island, if he didn't eat the night before, he would wake up and there wouldn't be any food left. And it was just so hard because, you know, he's eating all the time because that's what his mind's telling him. Tomorrow there's not going to be any food. There mightn't be any food in 3 hours' time. I need to eat. But nobody would listen to me because, no, that's not true. Just tell him not to eat. Just this. But, you know, it was a very long journey on the food sort of thing. And, you know, everybody knew that he had the talent. Everybody knew that he had the talent. But, he was a lower year, so it didn't really matter that year. So, yeah, you got through it. Yeah. And, you know, he says, oh, yeah, we played in a grand final. And it's one thing that I'll always remember, the prelim. They were down. They were down by a lot. And I think Dyson Heppelard had 44 touches or something like that in this prelim. And Anthony was on the sideline, and all of a sudden Damien said, throw him on the wing. Let's see what he can do. And they threw him on the wing. And, of course, because he's such an exceptional kick, bam, bam, bam. There was about 3 goals all at once that came. He didn't kick them, but he just got them moving. All of a sudden, people are going, he's got some speed. And I'll tell you this, Damien Carroll actually come up to me after the game and said, he won't be noted for this, but I can tell you that kid just won us that game. And I went, oh, yeah, okay. So, you know, as I said, he had the skills, but neither of us understood what he had to do to actually make it in football, and it was the least of what we wanted anyhow. He just wanted an education, and I just wanted him to learn how to live and to actually be a kid again and enjoy life. What was the grand final like?
Yeah, I think it was a bit different because it was grand final. So I think we played at Marvel Stadium or Etihad back then. So
you played against Wallace and Libertore and all. Are they called the Cannons?
Yeah, played called the Cannons.
Yeah.
So it was. I think we went well until the last quarter. We were down by a goal, I think. So.
No, that was your second grand final. You got flogged by Calder Cannons.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So,
they were a good team.
Yeah, they were a really good team. Yeah. So.
And so that year you also played nationals. What was that like? So you played in the under-16s when you were 14 and then you never got picked again. But because you were down playing with Gippsland Power, they picked you in the under-18 nationals. Yeah. So what did you do then?
I think we had to... Our first game was up in Darwin, was against Vic Metro. It was another game that I guess I was just really enjoying my footy and wanted to go and play. And it was a tough match, but I think we sort of we won that game. And Vic Metro was probably the team that were up there.
Yeah, I think that was Vic Country the first time you played. I think the second time you beat Vic Metro. So here's this kid that's come down to Melbourne now. All of a sudden, he's flying all around Australia playing in the under-18 team. Discipline, was it there?
No, it wasn't there. you have your buffets, I guess. It's all open to you. So we didn't really, got disciplined, to eat the proper food. So...
And they thought it was amazing that they could get the kids, the NT kids, actually off their phones while they were actually telling them the game plan and things like that. But you'd had a bit of experience, so you were sort of thinking, what are these kids doing, weren't you?
Yeah, so it was a bit different that system they had there compared to what I was doing at Longwarrie and with Gippsland Power. So. For me it was like, what are they doing here? So the whole routine sort of changed for me. I was eating, whatever I was eating, and most of the other kids were doing the same. So that was probably the difficult part of it. Playing nationals.
And that year you played for Druin. Did you want to play for Druin seniors?
I wanted to play under 18s because I was playing 18s at Gippsland Power, and I thought playing under 18s would be appropriate. I didn't want to play seniors, so I think I only had one game that I played under 18s, and the coach pretty much said, you're good enough to play seniors from then.
So. But I don't think you played another game, did you? Because you'd been playing with Gippsland Power. So if you get picked for Gippsland Power, that's who you play for, and if you don't, then you go back and play on a Saturday with your local team. So so it was for both of us, it was sort of a year that really just raced, really. And the next thing, he's playing in the grand final, and so you played in two grand finals because Druin. Oh, that was the second year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the football finished. Yeah, and what did you do?
Oh, I can't remember what I did.
You went back home for a couple of weeks and played footy again because up there they play from September to March, where we play sort of March to September. If you want to play footy all year round, you can. But the difference with Anthony was I made him come back because he had to go back to school, because the whole idea of if he came back, he could only be, it was just 1 year. So he had to finish school, and that's the agreement that we had, that he had to finish school to the end of the year. So once you finished school, what was your decision then?
For me, I knew there was a lot of opportunities down in Melbourne, so I wanted to stay again and further my education and or find something else, either work or keep going with my footy. So
And you had to do pre-season this year. You didn't do pre-season the year before. What was that like?
Yeah, it was pretty hard. I guess training, you don't really train on the island. You just pretty much, do a drills and have a kick and that's it. So,
If they sprint 100 metres, they think they've trained.
Yeah. So, yeah, for me, it was a good opportunity, but it was, I was kind of nervous and didn't understand, what would take to, get your fitness up. So, we did a lot of 400s.
Lots of 400s.
So that was, it was hard for me because I was going to the stage where I didn't, know how to train my body. I was doing pre-season and it was pretty hard and I was struggling. I was the last guy in the back. So, so I found that pretty hard.
And also, your skill level, because he had the skills, they sort of overlooked the fact that he could hardly do all his 400s. But he was trying. I was just amazed at how much he actually did. You started running 3Ks then at home, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I did because, I knew that it was going to help me, I guess, with my fitness. It was sort of on and off because, a few times I would, I'd be keen to go and do it. Then, a few times I'd just go and just walk the whole way. So, that was probably the bit where I sort of, needed to understand, I guess, how it takes.
Your season was a bit up and down because you were top age. You were bottom age playing in top age with all the top ages and they'd sort of moved on and that was a really good team. And this year, you weren't quite as good, were you? So about three games from the end of... So we'll go back a bit and say I didn't think he was playing very well. You've got to remember, I'd seen him as a 16-year-old and he'd absolutely ripped games apart playing against men, and when he was there everybody would say, oh, you're playing really, really well, and I'd say to him, hey mate, I don't think you're doing real, yeah, but the coaches are saying I'm doing really, really well. And I said, yeah, but sometimes they're just saying that. And I said, because I don't think you're playing well. Anyway, we did have a few arguments over this, and three games from the finals, what happened?
Yeah, three games from the finals, they come up to me and said, if you're not going to play well, we're going to drop you. So that was the first time I've ever heard a coach pretty much saying, you're not playing well, so you need to play well.
And this is in his whole life, the first time ever. So you were pretty down.
Yeah, I was pretty down and, I guess went to mum and said, oh, they're going to drop me if I don't play well.
What did mum say? I told you so. But you were ready to say, well, I'm not playing anymore.
Yeah, I think from that bit, I was just, disappointed and didn't want to play because of the coaches and how they, treated me. They were saying, you're playing well, and then three games to go, you need to play well, otherwise we'll drop you. So.
And did you decide, okay, I need to play?
Yeah, I think from that bit you sort of understand, who you need to listen to and, the people that, are going to be honest and tell you, what you need to hear, and sometimes you don't want to hear it. But, for me, that was the point that, mum sees it from a coach's point of view. And, from that bit it sort of got used to mum saying all that stuff.
So you were 18 now and it was draft year. Draft you? Did you think you'd get drafted?
Yeah, I thought I was. I thought I had a good chance to get drafted. Everyone pretty much, said I'll get drafted because of my skills and really talented, and I had a lot of confidence going into the draft. But
I can remember some recruiters came out and they said that he had the best interview of any Indigenous that they'd ever interviewed before. They were, really, really rapt with how he conversed with them, and because now he was learning English, and because he hadn't really learnt English on the island, he talked correctly because his English teacher, he'd had one-on-one at school with an English teacher who was very tough on him and made him put in the Ds and the As, and so he was taught English the way we were when we first start learning. But what happened?
With
drafting?
Yeah, it didn't happen, so that was, I was really disappointed, but, you know, you'd sort of understand, I guess, you know, what you need to do to get drafted, and, talent doesn't really, you know, get you drafted most of the time, so...
Yeah, but you were a little bit jealous that there was a few people, actually, that you thought you were better at than at football that got drafted, weren't you?
Yeah, a few of the players that I play with that, you know, thought I was good enough to get drafted than them. So, I was kind of, disappointed but jealous at the same time that they took other players than me. So,
So we were going to go back to play with just Druin. And what happened?
I think we played in the prelim.
Yep.
And
what did the coach say to you from Druin? So the coach at Druin said, "You've got too much talent, mate. I'll help you get fit. You can't throw away your talent." And I can't remember his name, but his brother, who was a very good footballer and won many over different leagues, won many best and fairest, he said he used to just stop and watch Anthony on the field and just work out what he was going to do next. And there was one game I remember, and it was pouring with rain, and there was mud absolutely everywhere. And he'd never played in mud. And he had it. I've got a photo of it. It's so funny. He had mud from head to toe, basically. There was one patch of green area down the side, down the wing. Anyway, I think you kicked 5 in the first quarter, didn't you? Because you just ran on that pass and everybody else is in the mud and they can't run and he's just taken off, and everybody at the ground was just in awe of this kid, and we were just laughing because we knew he was fast, but he just happened to pick the one bit of part that you didn't have much mud on you after the first quarter, but by the end that part then just got muddy and muddy, and it was really incredible to watch. But you decided that was it. If you weren't going to get drafted, you weren't going to go any further?
Yeah, I thought, you know, I'd just go and play local, and, because I was disappointing that I didn't get drafted, so, I'd just go and,
So, off to Casey, Mum said, off you go. Were you going to do that?
Sometimes.
So, it really wasn't what... You know, you just assume that you were going to get drafted, like most kids do. So, everybody had said from when Anthony was younger that, you know, he was going to get drafted and whatever. On the island, like, as the kids grow up, they sort of know who's got the talent and who doesn't have the talent. So in his mind, that's just what's going to happen. You've got to understand that they've got no idea about... like the nutrition and just the training and what they actually have to do to actually make it at AFL. So one of your mates came round, because I rang him, and he said, get in the car.
Yeah, I tried to pull a ciggy, so I told him I was sick and, you know, I can't train, but, you know, I didn't want to go on training, so I think he came around and picked me up, and
I said he's not sick. Go and get him.
Yeah.
So you started training at Casey, didn't you?
Mm.
Yeah. And so you were doing okay. Everybody knew once again that he had the skills, but what happened?
Then again, it sort of struggled a bit because we did a lot of 400s again, and it was just 3K time trial, and I was struggling a bit with my back. My back was a big issue with my pre-season, and I guess it was going through that stage where it's sort of trying to get used to the long distance and trying to get fitter. So, it was
so you
still
had to
still a struggle there.
You had to do the 1,000 steps, didn't you?
Mm.
And how did you go doing the 1,000 steps for pre-season?
No, I walked some of them. Yeah, it was a bit hard, but yeah.
And what was a problem, though? You really did have a problem.
Yeah, it was my back problem.
Yep.
I think they found the...
Hold on, we'll get into that in a minute. Yeah, so he did have a back problem. He'd had a back problem since I'd brought him down from the Tiwi Islands. We thought it was a calf problem running into his hemis, but, you know, I don't think you missed a game. So you just kept playing footy the whole way through. So we knew it wasn't too bad, but whenever he'd run over about 1,500 metres, he would just get excruciating pain on his back. Now, a few of the physios and that at Casey, what did they call you?
Pretty much called me a sook. That, you know, I'm just sooking. I'm not, I'm just complaining.
I knew that he wasn't a sook because I'd seen this kid sit in a dentist chair and decide that he didn't want any anaesthesia or anything because it made his head go funny. So he got his teeth done without it. So I knew that he wasn't a sook because we went back many times to get his teeth done. So I knew that there was a problem, but we just had to work out what it was. You weren't happy there?
No, I wasn't happy there. You know, I thought, I guess I was doing well, like pre-season, but I wasn't happy with the treatment that I had there. So, then...
Yeah, we got a phone call.
Yep.
Who was that from?
From Essendon.
Yep.
Merv Cairn came.
Yep.
So that was the first time that a recruiter came and had a talk to me one-on-one.
So it was a little bit different because he was an AFL recruiter. So most VFL players, like if you're going to go into the VFL, the VFL recruiters and the VFL managers will come and see you and that. So, and we didn't know that. We had no idea that this was an AFL recruiter that was on holidays. And that, so Essendon called him up and said, oh, do you think you can go and see this kid? And he came. And what was your interview about?
Few ground balls and handballs and see if my back was sore. So that was the thing that it hurt and wanted to see if,
how bad it was going to be. Because we told him right from the start that he had this bad back and that we didn't know whether he'd be able to reach the fitness levels that he had to actually make it. But Merv, he really enjoyed it. He said, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, and you know, pretty much, you know, thankful that he came and gave me the opportunity, I guess, to come to Essendon and try out with the VFL team because they're going to go standalone from Bendigo Bombers to Essendon. So, then I think we had a chat and you know said it would be a good opportunity to go and do pre-season with them and you know see how we go. So.
And what was the proviso that you could go and play with the Essendon VFL. Where did you have to live?
So I have to live in Essendon, so I ran Essendon because, you know, living at Long Warrior was, you know, a bit far and, you know...
They wanted to see whether he could actually live in the city.
Yeah, so I moved from the country to the city, you know, to see if, you know, I can, I guess...
So you'd handled the move from the island down and, you know... A bit different, but you'd handled that, but they wanted to see whether he could be gone from the country and exist in the city, I suppose. So we made the move. And so what were you doing? You had to work because we already had a house in Long Warrior, but we had to go and rent a flat. So...
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I had to, I guess, work to pay the rent, so, 'cause mum... wasn't going to pay the rent. So I guess...
I was a single mum. I was still working at Long Warrior.
Yeah, so I think I was doing 2 days a week at Essendon and had another job at Cairo Christian School back home. So I was doing two jobs a week plus playing footy. So it was
so what would happen on a Friday? Because you worked on a Friday... The VFL trained on a Friday.
Yeah, so VFL trained on a Friday. So we We'd drive down Thursday night to Long Warri, then work on Friday, then had to leave around 3 to get to training at Windy Hill. So that was pretty much the whole month or season, so until we found a place to live close by.
Yep. So you had to do a 2K time trial. This is funny. So you're doing a 2K time trial, your first one that you've done at Essendon. And what happened?
I think we were okay. Then I ended up taking my shoes off and ran without shoes. So that gave me extra bit to go. But my 2K time trial was 9 minutes.
plus.
9 minutes plus. An average 2K is like 6:30. Sub 7. So
sub 7. To make still, AFL, you need to be at least sub 7.
Yeah.
So, some of the guys that were actually playing AFL at that time, they said they've never, ever seen anything like it. And he's running around and the next minute the shoe's gone and the shoe's gone again. And, because you'd never really done it at a time trial as such, did you?
No.
Because at the draft camps, because he got through to the state draft camps a number of times and, but you still didn't have to...
We had to do the beep test, but I wasn't good at it. So.
Yeah, and you got to remember, that's all new to him as well. So you started playing VFL, or did you?
Did I?
No. You were in the VFL team, but what happened?
Play VFL, then again you have to have your local team. So I was playing at Aberfeldy, Codney Jones, which I played with with two Bombers. His local club was Aberfeldy, and I went and played with him and had a few games there because, Essendon didn't know whether if I can play VFL. So I played a few games there, with Aberfeldy. So.
Yeah, and then you finally got in the VFL team after about 3 weeks. Mm. And how'd that go?
My first game went quite well, I'd say, but... for me, it was the level was probably high. I was sprinting a lot, and I remember now that the next day I was that sore that I couldn't walk because my hammies were so tight that I was just pretty much just sprinting. That was the first time that.
And you told all the physios and that you were sore, didn't you?
Yeah, I told them that I was sore. My hammies and calves were sore. I couldn't train, so.
So he couldn't play?
So from there they just said, we have to rest you for a week and we'll put you in the rehab group. So I told them, I didn't injure myself, but I'm, a bit tired because I was sprinting a lot. And so that was the first lesson I've, learned that you never tell a physio. Never tell a physio that you are, you got tight hammies or tight calf. Because
is that why? Because the rehab group is harder. Harder.
And but rehab is a lot of yeah.
Yeah,
lot harder,
but then so. then they didn't play you again for about 3 or 4 weeks, did they?
Nah, so I had to go back and play with Evers again. So it was again new environment, new people I had to meet. So.
And it was funny because I don't understand, and you're getting inside information here. I don't understand how they think about everything, but I said this isn't right. He's tearing it up at Abbas. Why isn't he playing VFL? And they said, his time trials aren't good and all this sort of thing. And we went, but, it's about playing footy, isn't it? And how about just giving another go? And they said, okay, we'll have a meeting. So Anthony and I rock up to this meeting. And we didn't know who these people were. So we had the coaches from Essendon, the recruiters from Essendon, the list manager for Essendon, and we knew that there was the coaches from the VFL and the sports scientist. And so the sports scientists are saying, your times are this and that, whatever. And you got to remember, I'm a sports coach, and I'd actually been, he'd been doing extra work outside of just playing VFL because I knew that he needed to get fitter. And they started saying all these times, and I said, no, just stop. I said, they were at the start of the season. I said, do you know what he can run now? No. This is VFL, it's not AFL. I said, oh, well, and they said, but, you know, he can't even run, swim, because he couldn't swim when he first came down. And so we used to go to the pool, didn't we? And we used to swim and swim. I said, he can swim a K now. I said, and you're going back on what he could do at the start of the year. You know, this is halfway through the season now. What are you going to do? And they said, oh, you know. And I think it was the list manager, Adrian, said, well, we'll put him on the park this week and see what he did. And I think he missed two VFL games after that. That was it for the rest of his time playing VFL. Because, you know, it's something that you have to understand, that they go off these bits of paper that they've got in front of them. And some players, they're never going to reach that level. It's got to be on ability, and that's what Anthony was about. But still, were you playing as well as what I thought you could play?
No. yeah, same thing. Didn't. It was more for the experience. Didn't even. You know, it was another level, so I didn't know how, I guess, to play well to get drafted.
But everybody, like, you got to remember, you're playing in the backs by this time, and you were getting the ball and you're running through them, and everybody thought you were playing really well, didn't they?
Yeah, everyone thought I played well because I was, you know, playing half back, taking the game on, and yeah, using my skills. Then yeah, everyone pretty much said, you know, well, you had a good chance
of getting drafted. Yep. And what did Mum say?
Nah, not going to happen. So, you know, that
by
was
this time, I'd sort of worked out what he needed to do to actually get to that level. And I knew that he wasn't doing the right thing. He wasn't living the right life. You know, he's still being one of the boys going out on a Saturday night. And just, I suppose, at that age, so you were what, 20?
Yep.
20, that, you know, the boys, you know, that's what they do. That off they go. And it came, what happened then? When Skippy then took over the next year as the coach.
Yep.
So you did a time trial, didn't you? And it was really good. Then 2 weeks later, after a Saturday night binge session with most of the boys, you did another time trial, and what happened?
Yeah, you know, you, I guess you elite runner. I was in the front, but because, you know, most of the boys had a big night, and you know, they were spewing up, and one of them almost fainted. So that was the session that we had to do a lot of running because, you know, the coach sort of knew that everyone, I guess, went out and had a big night. So, yeah, that was when Skippy
sort of
took over.
So you all copped it, didn't you?
Yeah.
And did that start your thinking that you had to change?
Yeah, I guess, you know, for me, you sort of understand your ways, and for me, I was just learning, you know, observing and seeing what other people were doing. And at that time, it wasn't for me, so I just said, no, I'm not going to be one of the boys. I'm going to take myself out of it, and, you know, I'll be one of them when I'm playing, but outside of it, I'll just, yeah, do my own thing. And, yeah, it started to change from there.
And a lot of things changed that year. You were playing for Aberfeldy. You played one game for Aberfeldy. You were still playing VFL, but who was your coach then?
Yeah, Mel Michael was my coach my second year. So, yeah, I guess it was good to have an AFL player, I guess, coaching you. So,
what did he think of you as a player?
Yeah, then again, same as everyone else, he thought, you know, I'm good enough to get drafted, and just, yeah, I guess other things that I could just work on to get drafted, so.
Yeah. So, you know, once again, everybody knew that he had the talent. It was just how that talent, how he could change his life, basically, to that talent. So, you know, we'd always gone to church ever since we'd been down. Anthony was brought up as a Catholic on the island by his grandma, so it wasn't sort of alien to him to go to church, and we were going to church all the time. And And all of a sudden, things started to click, didn't it?
Yeah, I guess for me, I was at a point in my life where I needed to make a few changes. And one Sunday we went to church and, I felt that God was talking to me and, saying, it's time to go another way and live the right way. So, from that Sunday, I gave my life to God and, had trust in Him that He, I guess, saved my life and has, I guess, the right path for me. So, from that point, I just knew that God will guide me through all those right decisions I'll make. So,
You really did stop going out. Hard decision in a VFL, AFL situation.
Yeah, it was a hard decision. But I knew in my heart that, for me to, I guess, live the right way and make a good decision for my life and for my family, that was the right decision. So.
And what was he trying you to understand about your fitness and where you had to go with that?
Yeah, I guess, drinking and that sort of doesn't really help you with your training and your fitness and how you go about it week by week. So, looking back now, it sort of, he was there to talk to you and, let you know that that wasn't the right thing to do. And, most of the time was sort of ignored. But, I was at a point in my life where I had to trust what he's going to do for me. So,
and so you started a different sort of training. So you started going to the club and you would train more at lunch times?
Yeah, so on my lunch break, I would go downstairs, grab a 10-kilo vest and jump on the treadmill, go for 20 minutes just hard as I could. Then I would go home after work and we would do another training session, just me and Mum. Then after that, I would get ready to go to VFL for training. So that was my routine. Every lunch, I would do extra running.
And what about your diet? Because you were still fairly big. So what about your diet then?
I had to change my diet a bit. I was still, trying to understand what I can and can't eat. So
no more donuts.
no more donuts.
No more. He used to love donuts.
Yeah, then I think, from that point, we sort of had a talk to a few of the dietitian and, it was just same. They put me in the same boat as most of the boys and they didn't really understand, what my body can take and I didn't even know at that time too. So
at this time we were reaching out because everybody knew he had the talent that watched him play VFL and we were reaching out. So the AFL, Essendon AFL then started to say, well, we'll come and see the nutritionist and we'll try and get him on a diet and we'll try, a number of things to try and get his fitness up. And as I said, as he'd said, he started to change his life and it started to be about football because this was what he wanted to do. He didn't want to be a carpenter. He didn't want anything. He just decided that he wanted to be a footballer. The year before, we decided as a family that he needed to get something behind him before he actually embarked on a trying really hard to get into football. So he went back and did a university unit and became a fully qualified teacher's aide. He was still working at school as a teacher's aide and he was still working at Essendon. But for me, you could see this click in his brain that, all of a sudden this was real. This is really what he wanted. He'd been hit a number of times by not getting in the draft, but sort of in my way, I knew personally he wasn't ready. He was sort of 20 at the time, but he'd had to go back and be a kid again and then come back and learn how to be an adult in this world, which is completely different to what he had lived up on the island. Still had exceptional skills, like, you know, and a football always in his hand, and he was always kicking a football. But what needed to change was inside him. That's what needed to change, and I saw that change happening, and he started, and all of a sudden people started to see the change happening at the club, okay? And you came home one day from the club and you thought?
Yeah, I thought, you know, this is going to happen. But yeah, same again.
Missed the draft.
Yeah, missed the draft, and I was really disappointed because I knew, you know, I was sort of training and trying to get drafted. So that was another disappointing end.
And so, what did you decide?
I think, yeah, I decided to, you know, that was it. You know, I knew that, I guess, you know, I tried my best. You know, I trained. I did everything that, you know, they wanted me to do. So, you know, I was at...
So what was your 2K time trial at this time? Can you remember?
No.
No, it was still about 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Still about 8 minutes. Still, you know. But to me, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't too bad. It had come down from 9:40, so, you know, he was doing okay. But it was a disappointment. It was a real disappointment. And so what did you say to me?
Yeah, you know, I said, this is it. Not doing it, quitting footy. You know, I'm going to go and try something else. And, you know, rugby was my first option. You know, I thought I did
first
everything.
First option, he'd met the some of the Australian Rugby Union players at a coaching sports day that we went to, and he ran rings around them. So they said, oh, come and play with us in Melbourne. And so that's what option. So that was going to be his option to go and play with them. But then I said to him, the one thing that Mel Michael always said to you, what did he say?
He pretty much said to me, you know, if you, you know, go and look in the mirror, and, you know, if you see that guy that, you know, knows that he's going to get drafted, can play footy, then you know in your heart that, you know, you'll work hard to get there. So, and Mum sort of, you know, bring me back to that, and still found it
daunting.
And
but I always knew that he could make it. I always knew that he had the talent to make it, and there was just something always that I knew that he would play AFL footy. And, you know, I don't know why, but I just had that faith. So I said to him for the first time ever, I don't want you to give up. It had not been my decision on what career path he needed to have. It had always been his. That's his desire, because I know played sport at a high level myself, and I know that nobody else can do it except yourself. You can do it. If you want it, you can do it. And I said to him, and he said to me, Mum, why do you want me to do this? And I said, because I think it's a shame that people in Australia aren't going to see your talent on the biggest stage. And I said, when they do, they'll understand that, you know, you do things that other people just can't even think of. And, you know, even, you know, you'd leave a VFL game and the AFL players would go, why isn't he drafted? You know, and it'd get to you because, you know, you're the mum, but you can't say too much. You know that he's got the talent. But it was just how do we work that out? I'd sat in when he was playing TAC Cup. I'd sat in a grandstand listening to recruiters tell me, like, they didn't know that I was his mum, and listening to them say, oh, you know, look at him. He's, you know, he looks as if he's 6 months pregnant. He's so fat. And, you know, you can't, as a mum, you can't say anything. You know, it hurts you. And it shouldn't be said, but I understood. I understood what they were saying, and I, you know, part of me did agree. But we couldn't work out why. Why was he putting on all this weight? And we finally got a manager. You wanted a manager then? Yeah.
Yeah, I thought, you know, I guess most of my career we, you know, thought we didn't need a manager, and yeah, I was at a time where, you know, I needed somebody that would help me get drafted, and yeah, Scotty Lucas was, you know, the person that we sort of gone and had a talk to, and, you know, I said to him, well, I need somebody to help me get drafted, and would you be the person that, you know, can help me? And yeah, it sort of agreed that he would, you know, help me talk to other people and people in the industry. So,
and one of the main things he said to us both is that Anthony wants to get drafted into the AFL. So he's VFL. So the people that are working in the VFL industry, they also want to go up into AFL. And sometimes they might have, you know, all the good intentions in the world, but there might be a problem there. So, you know, you have to take control of your own career. And once they said that, we sort of looked at each other and went, well, we've done everything that everybody's told us to do, the nutritionists, everything, and nothing was really working, was it? Mm. So we had another meeting with Mal Michael, didn't we?
Yep.
Because he had to go back and play for Aberfeldy again for his third year at VFL. And it was the turning point in Anthony's real career, in a way, wasn't it?
Mm.
Because what did he say?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, told me that for him, he had to go back to what his ancestors would eat, so fish and, you know, things that I guess the island people would eat.
Because he was an islander.
Yeah, and he told us that there was this dietitian that works with the, used to work with the islanders at the rugby, and she came and worked with Brisbane, and that's where I guess he found her, and she helped him with his diet, and yeah, he gave us a few advice about, you know, you go back to, I guess, what your people ate. So
most athletes are told they need to eat carbohydrates, okay, and have Gatorade just to, you know, give them the energy and all that. But then we realise that, you know, Anthony is a full-blooded Indigenous. He never grew up on that, nor did his parents, his ancestors. So the carbs just weren't the way for him. And the more I thought about it, Indigenous people have problems with diabetes, right? And once I sort of thought, well, this is all sugar. We're just putting sugar into his body. His body, he can't cope with it. And, you know, we got down to having very small meals and doing exactly what we were told by the nutritionist, but still nothing was working. So we just stripped it back, totally stripped it back. And he ate only at home. And it was back to his ancestors. It was the prawns and the fish and meat. He could eat meat, but no carbohydrates, no flour base. Take the bread out of it, and all that sort of thing. And you got really good at that, didn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just sort of, you know, that's the way we have to go. And for us, it's, we have to do it ourselves. And, you know, we pretty much did most of the things with the diet our way, which, you know, helped.
Which is really hard when you're trying to fight an establishment because they've learnt that, you know, athletes need this. So it wasn't easy, but we just decided that that's what we're going to do. And we decided that you were going to train and not do 400s anymore.
No, so we, I think we did a lot of 1Ks.
A lot of 1Ks, and that came about because the end of that second year of VFL, Anthony had, he had started, so it was the pre-season of the third season, his third year in VFL, and he came home and he said, I can't do this anymore. I said, what's the matter, mate? And he said, Mum, my back, it's just absolutely killing me. And I said, fine, okay. Well, you now have to go and tell him. If you want to stop, then, you know, you have to go and tell him. And we went to Wendy Hill, and you got out the car, didn't you? And he was going in to tell them that he couldn't play anymore because he was in excruciating pain, because that's what they did. They did their 400s and their 800s and that. And even when they did their 2K runs, being in VFL, that's where they did it. Anyway, we went in there and Des, who's still with Essendon now, he goes, "What's the problem?" And I said, "He can't do it." And Anthony said, "I'm excruciating pain." And Des said, "I don't understand why you're in excruciating pain." And a man called, Doc Reed was there. And he said, "What's the matter, mate?" He said, "Oh, I've got a bad back." He said, "I've had it all the time." He said, "But, you know, I get to a certain point and I can't push through it." He said, "Come and see me." So this man who was going through a lot in his own personal life, took him under your wing, under his wing. And what did he say to you?
So I think we had a look at, you know, what was the problem. And, he found a...
Describe it? He found out that Anthony had three things wrong with his back that nobody else had picked up. And that, yes, he was in excruciating pain. And that, so the small holes in his back, and in his back vertebrae, were smaller than normal. His nerve endings were smaller than normal. So whenever, you know, we get to a certain point when we're running and our body starts to tighten, so the muscles were pushing on his nerve endings. And Doc Reed didn't know how he actually ran, you know, could run any long distance whatsoever. So he came into the club and he said, "Right, you guys, he's not running long distance anymore. He's going to do 200 metres. And that's how we started, wasn't it?
Short sprints, you know, heaps of 100s, 200s.
And I used to have to write it all down and take it into Doc Reed. And he goes, "Are you for real for these times?" And I go, "Yep, this is what's happening." And he did say eventually over time his body would actually get used to all the sprints and the long distance, and it would just take time for his muscles to actually work their way through. But, you know, none of us really knew when that would happen. So Doc Reed became your best mate, didn't he? So all that year, he'd have a fight with the coaches, wouldn't he?
Yeah, so I actually rang the coaches and went through them, and, you know, you have to understand this is, you know, he's not, I guess, the same as most players. He's different because of his back, and you have to train him differently compared to others. So, you know, he was the guy that really supported me through those tough, period with, you know, training and making people understand that, you know, I am struggling. I'm struggling with my back. You have to understand it. And
the funny thing is, Anthony had always said to me, "I'm not puffed. I'm not puffed, Mum. It's just my pain, the pain in my back." And we started doing a lot of 500s, didn't we? Yeah. So his training regime went up another notch. Now that we knew this and we knew that we had to get... He had to actually get to a certain level in doing his 2K run. We started lots of 500s, lots of 1K runs. And he still does that today. That's the best way to get him to where he needs to be fitness-wise. And you'd go in after doing your training in pre-season to the club and you'd do more. And what the AFL blokes used to say to you?
Yeah, just, you know, how you doing this? Like, you know, they were pretty much shocked that I would do more training than them to get drafted. And that was probably the point where, you know, I knew that I can, you know, work harder to get drafted. And, you know, I knew those players sort of can help me get drafted by, you know, starting that conversation by, you know, well, he's doing a lot of training than us, so... for me, it was just, you know, I need to keep going and keep training hard and, do the extra work even.
And, and the kilos started to move because we were on this new diet.
Yeah.
And the other thing was the understanding of the game plan. So you had this coach, Skippy, who's still there, Hayden Skipworth, and he started... to understand that Anthony was a really good player and that he could make it. So we started giving you homework.
Yeah, gave me a few homeworks to do. You know, for, I guess, Skippy, he was sort of really understanding, knew what I was going through, and, you know, I didn't, like, I would sit there and pretty much agree with, you know, what they were saying, but I didn't really understand it, so, but for him, we just sort of, you know, had homework to do. After training, he would, you know, write stuff on the book, and it would get me to write it, explain it, then another thing, I had to go and take it home, and, you know, go through with mum and do the same thing. So that was my homework. We, you know, after training, we'd do that, then take it home, do it with mum, and, you know, sometimes she'd be like, you know, what's this? And, you know, sometimes I'll just try to explain it. But that was probably the best way to, I was learning the structures and what the coaches were saying. So, you know, Skippy was probably, you know, most of the other players would have, I guess, experience with Skippy through their careers because of who he is, and, you know, he's really understanding and can help you with your footy, and he was one of the person that helped me understand the structures and what other people were saying. So,
but you've got to remember, we still had a problem, and it was called the 2K run. This problem had been a problem now for 5 years, and it wasn't going to go away. So we'd be down at the Oval and you'd run your 2K run, and what did I say, would I say to you?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, not good enough, go and do it again.
And see, when we embarked on this to actually really have one more year at it, I said, when we're down there at the footy Oval, I'm not your mum, I'm your coach. So it doesn't matter what you say to me, I'm your coach. And all mums would know, really, deep down inside, you're still a mum. So deep down inside, you're still a mum. And that was the hardest part for me. It was the fact that I had to put all that aside. And we'd argue. Like I'd say, and he'd say, I'm not doing it again. I've had enough. I can't possibly do it again. And I'd say, well, if you're not going to do it again, I'm going home. And then off I'd go, and he'd come up, oh, I'll have one more go. And then he'd kill it. Like, he'd get to, I think the best you ever did down there at Glenroy was 7:30, which was amazing for what he was doing. You know, we had one blue, and he didn't come home for 3 hours, and I thought, oh, where is he? You know, but he had to go away and think about it, and he had to go away and see whether this is what he actually wanted in life, really. I could only do so much with him. So, you got to a point where you were playing good footy?
Yeah, playing really good footy. Just really enjoying it. Then I think we played in the, was it prelim?
Yep.
It was a prelim finals that, you know, it was probably, you know, the game that I had to perform, and, you know, it was a big crowd and a lot of people were going to be there watching, and had the best game that I've ever played in the VFL. And
what happened? The list manager from Essendon said to him, put him in the middle, I want to have a look at him.
I guess said to the coaches that he wanted to see me in the midfield, and I think it was second half, then...
You almost won it for him.
Yeah, almost won the game for him, and, you know, sort of went out with confidence then that, you know, I'll actually get a chance here, but, you know, I wasn't going to, I guess, look ahead, just, yeah.
Mm. And so Adrian was in touch with you quite a few times then, wasn't he?
Yeah, so it was another thing I had to, I guess, try to tick off, and 2Ks was, you know, the one that, I guess, stopped me from achieving... getting drafted. And
so we're at school one day and we've got 100 kids in the hall, and the sports teacher had gone out and we got these 100 kids, and the next minute I see him on his phone. I said, hey, he said, I had to take it, mum, it's Adrian. I said, well, okay. So I've got these 100 kids, and I could see him, and he sort of fell back on the basketball post, And I said, he said, I've got to leave. And I said, what do you mean you got to leave? We've got 100 kids here. You're not leaving me with 100 kids. And he said, well, that was just Adrian. It's not going to happen. And I said, look, we'll decide. We'll work it out later. You just get back in here and help me. And I think that was the first time in his life that he'd had this worried look, anxiety that I had seen that, you know, something that he really wanted, it just wasn't going to happen. Anyway, the sports teacher came in and I said, look, I've just got to take Anthony out. He's just had a phone call and he's not looking real good. And he said, yeah, it's fine. I'll dismiss the kids early. And we went out and what did Adrian say to you? No, well, it was yours.
Yeah, pretty much wanted me to do a 2K.
Sub 7.
Yeah, sub 7. So, you know, I'm thinking, no way I'm doing this. And, yeah, that was probably...
You had 2 weeks.
Yeah, I had 2 weeks to get it down under 7 minutes. So.
And his best time was a 7:40. That was the best time.
Yeah. Yeah, then I told you that I have to get it down under 7. And we went back. I think we went back home and we did a time trial. We went to the club. Then,
yeah. It was 8 plus.
Yeah, I thought.
Back to 8 plus.
Yeah, I thought I ran really well. But, yeah, Mum said, oh, that was, you know, wasn't a great time. And I said to Mum, no, that's it. I'm not doing this. I'm quitting now. And that's it. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm done. And then we pretty much said, you know, let's just go inside the club and have a look at, you know, who's in the club and who we can go and talk to. And there was a, you know, one person out of, you know, all the people at the club that was at the club. And, you know, I don't know what happened, but, yeah, he pretty much was there. And
he just said, yeah. Leave it with me.
Yeah. So we went to him and, you know, said, I did a 2K time trial. I'm not going to, you know, reach my goal. That's it. But I need somebody to help me achieve.
And he said that everybody at the club wanted him drafted. So they would leave no stone unturned to get him down to under 7 minutes.
Yep.
So you started with PT on Monday.
Yeah, I started with PT on Monday. So he was our... Yeah, I guess, training coach. So, you know, I was just a VFL player and there was a lot of, you know, North Melbourne players that he knew from North Melbourne and a few of the Essendon boys. And he pretty much said, you know, come to training with us. We're training at Princess Park and we'll do some training there. And, yeah, pretty much.
It was about 5 sessions, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 5 sessions. And the last session I did was... 6:58. So,
and he said, "Ah, that's it." Because you said, "What time tomorrow?" And he said,
"Yeah,
don't need to come back." And Anthony came home and he said, "Oh, I don't know what's going on." Yeah. So.
Yeah. Then I think I had a couple more weeks to go. I think. A
couple more days.
Well, a couple more days. Yeah. Then I guess I was at work. I was doing multicultural at the club and going doing footies with the multicultural school, teaching them about AFL. And yeah, it was a day before the rookie draft that I got a phone call from Adrian. And I was in the middle of teaching AFL, but I said to him, I need to take this. It's really important. And yeah, pretty much said to me, you know, come to my office after work and we'll have a chat. And yeah, went to his office and pretty much, yeah, got the good news that I was going to get drafted in the rookie list. And, yeah, that was probably the best thing, or the best part of it going in.
We did leave out one major part. It was when you met John Walsfold.
Oh, yeah. So
I'll tell my part, then you can tell yours. So he came home and he said, oh, I've met John Walsfold. I said, oh, yeah. He said, yeah, I told him I was from Tiwi Islands. And he said, oh, I've played with a few Tiwi players. And I said, alarm bells ring off. And I said, you do understand that they know that you don't run much up there. Like, you know, that you're really good at footy, but you can't run much. I said, you need to go back and talk to him again and tell him how much you actually want to make AFL. So What did you do?
Yeah, I just walked to his office and, you know, keep going. Didn't really went to his office, so I just go, you know, back and forth, and, you know, I just had the courage to go and knock on his door and, you know, said to him that I really, you know, want to play AFL. You know, I would do anything to get drafted if you just give me the chance to, yeah, be on the list, and I can do, you know, pretty much anything. And, yeah, he pretty much said, well, yeah, we'll
work it out.
Work it out, and, yeah.
And once again, he went to Skippy, and Skippy said, I think it's time we give this kid a chance. So he'd got his 2K trial down under the seven, and then, yeah, so you got drafted. Your first training session back, and we'll finish it after this one. First training session back, what did Woosha say to you?
So Woosha came up to me and said, you know, there's one spot on the list if you really want it. You know, if you want it, you can work hard for it. And from that point, I just said to him, you know, I'm not going to, I guess, look back. I'm going to look forward and work hard for that one spot. And, yeah, from that point, I'm just, you know, thankful that, I guess, you know, Essendon gave me the opportunity to get drafted and, yeah, made the most of it and, yeah, pretty happy with it.
Yeah, so just to wrap it all up, from our point of view, we came down and didn't understand really what needed to be done and how hard you actually had to work to make AFL. And I think it's just with everything in life, sometimes there comes a time that you need to change your life. And Anthony's done it quite a number of times. But this time it was about football and it was about, okay, let's get serious. He still doesn't go out. Now he'll go out with the boys, but he doesn't necessarily have to drink. He, you know, it's about football for him, and it really, once he got his education, it was always going to be about football. And I think it's just persistence and just have a belief in yourself and, you know, listen to people. Like, don't just dismiss them. We could have dismissed Mal Michael a number of times, but he always kept coming back into our life, and he is a real catalyst of why, you know, Anthony is an AFL player, and Skippy also. So you have to have the trust in people, and know where you're headed, and just keep working on it, because if you work at anything, eventually it will happen. And, you know, Anthony's story is quite incredible. That's just one part of his journey that you've heard, and that just happens to be his football journey that he's taken. Do you want to say anything?
I guess for me, yeah, I just, you know, I had to work hard, you know, for the things that I wanted to achieve, and you know, nothing comes easy, I guess. So for me, I knew I had the talent, but I had to work hard for my education, work hard for my football, and you know, keep working out for the things that I'm looking forward to in life. So yeah, I guess that's probably my big thing.
Have we got any questions very quickly before we go and have supper? You going to do that?
All right, we got 8:30. Thanks, guys, for that. We'll give you a round of applause at the end. But we won't have too many questions probably, but I won't be like Roaming Brian on the Channel 7, so I won't be that entertaining. But does anyone have any questions we'll run through to start off with for Anthony or Jane? Or, yep, one at the back there. I'll pass you the mic. You're up? Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good now. Yeah, I had to work, I guess, you know, get used to the long distance, and you know, my fitness is really good, so my body's just got used to it now. So yeah, it's pretty good.
He runs pretty good times on
2K. Here we go.
And I guess you're happy at Essendon, Anthony.
You can say no comment.
Well, we're playing finals, so yeah, I guess I'm pretty happy now, so yeah.
Anyone else?
Can you play on next year?
Yeah, I'll play footy next year, yeah, for sure.
Any others? Yep, one at the back. Any others? Yep, at the back. Yell out.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I was the only one that tackled a lot. That's that NT. So.
Because he was the youngest, you got to remember, he was only 14, he had to do the hard work.
Yeah, so I think for me, just I really enjoyed the fans, I guess, you know, watching me chasing down players, so yeah, I really enjoyed too.
Not
really. For me, I'm just pretty relaxed. I go and have a kick, engage with the fans, have a photo, sign some signatures and stuff. So that's probably the one that, you know, I guess make me play really well if I go and see those joy in fans. But the big thing is, you know, we pray before game. That's our big thing. So wherever we go, you know, if mum's away, I'll give her a ring before I'm at the ground, and you know, we'll pray. So that's probably the big thing, I think, for me. So, yeah.
Hi.
Anyone beat that? Anyone else?
Yeah, that's a good one. For me, like, I had that in the VFL, so, for me, I just keep it normal, you know, be the same person. You know, I wouldn't change, I guess, if I'm, you know, a big AFL star. You know, for me, I just keep it normal and keep it the same. But the difficult one is, you know, if I'm with families, that's sort of hard when you go out and you know, go out for lunch and you get recognised a lot, and fans want photos, so that's probably the one I'd struggle with a bit. But you know, I'm always, you know, down for photos and talk to people, so yeah. Yeah, happy for a chat, so yeah, it's all good.
I just wanted to ask, there's one thing in footy I can't understand. Every time someone kicks a goal, they have to go off on the bench. And I think they're just getting, you know, worked into it. Why do they take, all the coaches take them off? I can't work it out.
Yeah, it's part of your rotation. So sometimes, you know, you kick a goal and you look in the bench and they have a sign with your number on, and you have to get off. So most of it had to do a lot with your rotation and sports science and GPS, how much you run and things like that. So, you know, I would love to stay there for the whole game, but yeah, there's other four players that want to get in, so, yeah.
Anthony, how important has mum been in your life?
Yeah, really important. You know, mum was there from day one, and she still is. She's always there to support me and my other siblings. You know, mum was probably, you know, if it wasn't for mum, I don't think I would be here. If she didn't take me in and give me that chance to, you know, I guess make something out of myself. So, yeah, I guess mum, yeah, mum's, yeah.
Yep, I'll come in.
I think I read, Anthony, that you have a younger brother who's very good at football too. Is that correct?
That's my cousin. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So up on the island, there's a lot of Tip and Woodies. So when you're down here and they hear the name Tip and Woody, they just assume. So I think Adam's about his third or fourth cousin. So... yeah, AJ, the mini-me. Oh, they all aim for AFL up there.
Yeah.
They all aim for AFL up there. Yeah, he probably missed the boat a little bit, like Anthony when he was younger, and I think that's where Anthony stands out from the rest of them. He was just determined to keep going and push through, you know, everything. Every obstacle that came his way, he would push through, you know. There's not a lot of people that would do what Anthony's had to do to make AFL.
I'll probably go up north and start my pre-season, so yeah. we do a lot of community work, so you know, I like to, I guess, give back to kids and that's the most important thing for me. Go and, you know, visit those community and I guess tell them that, you know, education is really important. And you know, if they want to achieve something like, you know, playing footy or you know, whatever they want to do, it's probably, you know, education is the you know, big thing for me. So and I like to get back to kids and yeah, and community. So yeah, true.
That has been a problem. I'm trying to work this out now, you know.
Are you going to be drafted to the Doggies?
Go on, answer it.
You can't be drafted.
For Anthony, it's about... playing the best footy that he can play. As I said, I've seen him as a 16-year-old and I don't think he's quite reached that yet. So just hang on to your seats because, yeah, he's extremely talented. And I think we've got a lot... You know, people sort of look at his age and go, he's 26, but he's only been in the system 4 years. So you have to also put that into consideration.
I was just going to say, at the Bombers Footy Club, who's the biggest pest?
I'd say Connor McKenna. This is a different cat.
Oh, sorry. Well, someone wants to know, is the tackle more special when it's dusty?
When it's dusty, the tackle.
Yeah, it is. It was funny because I was down at Three Little Pigs and... this young fella was coming along and, you know, he saw me and didn't want to talk to me. And before they left, and I did me one thing and make sure you would tackle Dusty for me. And that night I did. And, yeah, I think I need to see that kid again. So,
Dusty and Anthony really get on. Like, you'll see if you watch it, there'll be a chuckle. And I'll always go, what were you talking about then, you know? Because, yeah, Dusty, yeah, they have a very high respect for each other.
All right, two more if there's anyone else. Or yep, one more.
I guess you have to have a game plan to play well, but you know, most of the time it's individual to, you know, show your talent. But yeah, I think I haven't really got coached that yet, so maybe next year. So, but you know, Wishy is always there to sort of give you confidence to go and play a game. And yeah, I think most of the time you have to go and play a game. But yeah, sometimes you have to stick to the structures. But yeah.
One more.
We'll do two more.
What play have you looked up when you were younger? Like, looked up to when you were younger?
So, growing up, I was a Carlton supporter, so... so Diesel, Greg Williams was one of the guys I really watched, and, you know, he was short, so, you know, I could sort of play like him. And Andrew McLeod was the other player that I really enjoy and love watching play, and, you know, be like him. So.
But on the island, you were known as Diesel.
Yeah, it was Diesel on the island, so.
Yeah.
Last one.
What's been your favourite on-field moment so far in your career?
Your first win. We were playing round two against Melbourne, and I think, you know, your first AFL win, you can't beat that. So that was probably my favourite moment.
All right, well, just have a couple of questions to see if you've done your research on Anthony. Does anyone know how many games he has played in total in his career? Without Googling, no Googling. I'm watching. Have a guess.
66.
No, it's a bit higher than that. Anyone else want to guess? Close. I'm not saying higher or lower, but it's close. Yeah. No, it's a bit higher than that. You want to have a guess? Higher? No, lower? No, higher? 88 it is. Well done. All right, another one. How about how many goals he's kicked in his career? Might not know himself. It's a bit higher than 92. It's more averages more than a goal a game. A bit lower. A bit lower. Yep. A bit lower. Bit higher. 98 it is, well done. And last one, I don't know if it's a bit easier. How tall is he in centimetres? Does anyone know this? You go again if you want. That's exactly right, well done. All right. I'll hand over to Helen to wrap it up.
Chaplaincy Committee. I'd just like to ask Barb to step out. For those who haven't met Barb, Barb is the chaplain here at our secondary college, and she does an amazing job. Thank you both very, very much for coming out tonight and helping support our cause. It's a very big ask for our committee of a few people to raise the amount of funds that we need. Thank you.